Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Rugby Tonight podcast. I'm Hugo Monier, and joining me today is Ben Kay. How are you doing?
I'm good, Hugs. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Good. We're approaching the final weekend of the regular Premiership season. The past weekend delivered in terms of excitement and surprises.
Right, let's crack on with some rugby news. And the first thing that caught our eye this week, Hugo, Dean Richards having his Newcastle contract extended. No surprises from Newcastle that they wanted to keep him, but I'm sure he wouldn't have been short of offers. So cracking for the Falcons that he's put pen to paper.
Yeah, why do you reckon it's taken him so long? Because with one round to go, do you reckon he looked at other offers? Do you think now they've secured that playoff spot that really cemented his future?
You don't know all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So he might have been waiting for assurances from Seymour Cundy, the owner, or, you know, vice versa. We just don't know what's going on, you know. But I think it's great because I'm loving the fact that there's a northern side or a couple of northern sides doing so well at the moment. Sale have had their moments this year as well. We need to grow the game in that part of the country. Yep. The Falcons have had a couple of sellouts this year. They've been to St James's Park and got 30,000 there, and they are playing a fantastic brand of rugby. And the big thing why I'm happy he's re-signed is I love the way that you've been coached. Well, he had him as your director of rugby. I said coached by him. But he's got a remarkable ability because you speak to him. He doesn't, you know, he's not one of these guys that revolutionises what the club's doing. But he's just got this sort of following, hasn't he? People want to follow him and he seems to have that golden touch.
Absolutely. I think his biggest strength, or two of his biggest strengths, is one is his recruitment. I think whatever meeting he turns up at, you kind of think, I'm dealing with Dean Richards, and of course he can sell you the dream, and it's not an empty dream, not empty promises, because Newcastle have shown this season that they deliver. But for me, his other biggest strength is the fact that he knows his weaknesses.
Yeah.
And he said it before the game. There are other guys in his coaching staff, like Dave Warder, who just get the game a bit better than he does. You know, they're a bit more in touch. So he doesn't want to be one of these guys that's massively hands-on when there's other guys that are out there who can upskill the players and put together a game plan that will suit the team and style that the team want to play in. So he's taken a step back. He overlooks everything. He's got the right players in. I mean, the fact that someone like Maxime Mermoz has barely featured in their team, and that is not just the signings that they've brought in, but the likes of Hammersley, Rob Vickers, unfortunately, is retiring this year. They've created their own stars. Callum Green, I know you're a big fan of his. So they've been able to do that. I could name a load more other guys. Gary Graham.
Yeah.
Honestly, in December, I was there thinking,
Who is this guy that's been picked in the England squad?
The last few weeks. Wow, what a player he is.
I think that's one of the strengths of Dean, isn't it? That no matter what your reputation is, if there's a young kid coming through, and he certainly did that at Leicester when I was there, if there's a young kid coming through and they're playing better than an international star, that bloke will start until the star starts playing better than the guy who's picked ahead. So he is one of the best development coach, or development directors of rugby. I keep saying coaches, he's not a coach, director of rugby. And potentially one reason why our own Austin Healey has mentioned that perhaps he should be considered as a future or have a future in that England role. What do you think?
I think Austin's right. I think he's right. Dean was quite quick to rubbish what Austin was saying. And for me, I thought he was protesting a bit too hard. So I'm sure there's a burning ambition. Hey, if an England job comes calling, you're not going to say no to it. And for me, Dean is, he's an icon of our sport. Everything that he's achieved as a player, now as a coach, and he's had a sabbatical and he served his time away and he's come back and he's proved his worth once again. So, and he said in his interview before the game on Friday night, he is old school. And that's the part of him which I really like, yeah. You know, rugby's roots and values, he, you know, he holds close to his heart, and I absolutely love that. So,
and perhaps in some environments, that's what's missing. I'm not not necessarily saying the England environment, but we said he's not, he doesn't revolutionise things or try to redesign the wheel like some directors of rugby do. And perhaps that's where his major strength is. You know, the fact that he can get these improvements just by tweaking the odd thing and choosing the right people. It's like Clive Woodward chose the right coaches, didn't he? And what would be interesting, though, is if Eddie Jones, because Eddie Jones has signed that contract extension himself, to bed the new coach in and have 2 years. I can't imagine those two in a room together going, yes, we should do that together. Yes, we shall.
Do you imagine?
Two
big personalities indeed. But yeah, I mean, he's certainly on the right course for whatever comes next, and it wouldn't be past him to be England coach as well. But in other news also, unfortunately, we're talking about Dean Richards extending his contract in his career. One absolute legend of the game, one of the best Red Roses, in fact, one of the best rugby players that England ever produced, Daniel Waterman. She's called time on her international career. Incredible. 82 caps, 15-year career, 47 tries. Just phenomenal. And if you
There's
not,
some worldies in there as well, aren't there?
Try against Wales at Twickenham last year. I mean, she's gone on about that, and fair play to her for, I've never scored a try quite like it. She'll be on Rugby Tonight later on tonight, so look forward to having a chat with her.
I'm going to carry on playing for Wasps, but yeah, I feel my time is now. I've had an amazing time over the last 15 years, and to finish my career when I'm playing some good rugby and on my own terms is something that I'm really proud of. Hard decision, but I'm proud of it.
And some other news, World Series rugby kicks off in Australia later this week, and there's a series of rule changes that's been announced. So shall we go through each one individually?
Well, I actually really like this, and it certainly is a positive step, and it's in a bid to provide more entertaining games. The following changes have been announced. Scrums will be given a max of 1 minute to be completed from the time the mark is made by the referee.
All right, the next one is power tries will be awarded for moves that begin inside the team's own 22 mark. And I think they'll get extra points for if you start within your own 22.
And the goalposts flash up different colours.
You've got a power try.
It's quite American, isn't it?
It's a bit dodgeball.
It is a little bit dodgeball.
Carry on. We've got more.
I think that's it, isn't it? I think that's it. There's one last one. A 12-man bench with rolling subs.
Yeah.
That's...
So, these are... Whenever any laws come in, and more serious laws that sort of World Rugby might have trialled and everything else, there's always the problem of, will that create other problems? It's a great idea, you know, in principle, but will it? And, you know, that 12-man bench with rolling subs, so we're talking about making more entertaining, fast-flowing games, but surely that makes it better defences if you've got less fatigue on the pitch. You might get more, you know, again, another byproduct. You may get more injuries. It's a little bit like the collisions in the NFL are higher than they are in rugby because you don't have that fatigue of running around. Suddenly, you can change basically your whole team. Are we going to get any space, and is it just going to become a collision-orientated game?
Yeah, I like the fact that they're thinking about the game. You know, it's great that the Champions Cup's in Bilbao, you know, moving to new territories, new ideas, new innovations to create a bigger fan base. As to whether it works, I'm not quite sure. I reckon I'd have a crack. I've been retired 3 years.
Good on you.
If I was part of that special teams, I'd come on to try and catch restarts, a few box kicks, and I'd be off again.
Excellent. With 12 really fresh defenders.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about, special teams at the minute.
The scrums one's interesting because I actually think there's something in that we want to reduce the amount of time around the scrum. And people have sort of muted stopping the clock until the ball comes out of the scrum. The issue, again, is how do you speed up? Once I get the whole sort of binding up process needs to speed up.
Yeah.
But does that not make it more dangerous if you've got to get it out within a minute and, oh, we've had a collapse, or we've already had one collapse, so now just get in as quickly as you can and collapse. It seems like there's one of those, yes, sensible ideas, let's speed up scrums, but if you put a minute clock on scrums, I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
We should probably have read more about it before we started talking. Do you get a free kick if you don't get it completed?
I'd like to think so, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the scrum's so technical, so many moving parts. And if you're under a time pressure to get the ball in and out, and your technique just wavers just for a split second, or one person within that scrum's not doing their job because they're more concerned about the ball coming out than technically actually providing the right angles or weight to the front row, second row, whatever it might be, then you might see injuries there. I desperately hope that you don't. I like the initiative of them wanting a faster flowing game. And especially scrums. I mean, the amount of games that we've commentated on, just thinking, I remember doing the clash, just thinking, what is going on here? Reset after reset. But then I personally think if you get two or three reset scrums, it should just be a free kick to whoever seems to be. I mean, that's certainly one way. But I'm not gonna poo-poo it right now. It'd be nice to see exactly how they get on.
Excellent use of the word poo-poo.
I don't think I've ever used that before, certainly not on a podcast.
Right, but it's an exclusive.
It's an exclusive.
On your exclusive.
There you are. Leave us a 5-star review
off
the back
of
that.
Would we like to see this in the wider game? I guess, as I said at the beginning, all rule law changes are trialled somewhere. Yeah. So we've had, was it the Welsh Premiership where they trialled 8-point tries and things? And some of them work and some of them don't. And the ones that work, we tend to see in the wider game. So maybe sort of some adaptations of this we might see in the Aviva Premiership at some stage.
I'd quite like
Well, we won't see it in the Aviva Premiership because it's not going to be the Aviva Premiership.
Do you know, like in the 2020, where you have to have X amount of fielders within certain boundaries, and then you have to have like a couple out on the touchline. Wouldn't it be great in the last 10 minutes you could play your power play, which meant that you could nominate one person from the opposition team that had to go off the pitch. So it was like 15 against 14 for like 5 minutes, and you could pull that out. I mean, that's radical, but... Mind you, looking
power
at those...
Play. You're desperate to get this power play.
Yeah, I just want to get a power play in. But, do you know, fair play to them. I like the thinking. Not sure on the execution.
The thing is, we haven't had an exciting enough league as it is with the laws that we've had this year. So let's change everything and try and make it more exciting. I don't know. I don't think anything radically needs to change, but I do agree, speeding up the game.
They should watch the Aviva Premiership. You're absolutely right, Ben, because it's been an unbelievable season. You know, we've had quality teams fluff their lines. We've had brilliant teams keep their status within the top four. We're going into round 22, and there's still a lot of teams who've got a huge amount to play for. So, Ben, an incredible weekend of Aviva Premiership rugby. It all started Friday night, Welford Road. I mean, you commentated on the match. Atmosphere looked incredible. It sounded amazing. I was sat at home watching the game. But what a performance from Newcastle, their ability to come back at 15 minutes to go. First time Leicester have missed out since 2004, and the first time Newcastle won at Welford Road in 20 years.
We've had the Dean Richards chat already, but I, having sort of played underneath him, I knew what they needed to do, and what he would have been saying was, stay with Leicester, because all the pressure's on them. There's no pressure on us whatsoever, and if we get to... 15 minutes towards the end and we're still in touch, we'll do this. And exactly that happened. Leicester played some good rugby. They looked comfortable for the first half, didn't they? You know, they didn't, probably would have wanted to get some more tries. But when push came to shove and they got towards the end of the game, they panicked about throwing their lead away and they stopped playing. They stopped trying to limit the number of mistakes they made. And we can't lose this mentality rather than going out to win it. And it cost them. And yes, there was some controversy with the final decision and how it, not necessarily whether it was a try, but how the decision-making process went with the referee and his TMO. But you can't fault Newcastle. And the attitude that club has had all season, you know, it's a great, great story. And to go to Welford Road and win a place they haven't won for... I think Dean Richards was playing last time they won against Gary Graham's dad, and so it was maybe written in the stars for him.
You're right. And just going back to that point of pressure, I think it was the 78th minute and Cecchino kicked to the corner and the cameras went up to the Newcastle coaching box. You got John Wells, Dean Richards, Dave Warder, and they're just wetting themselves laughing because they know, hey, if we scored, then it's great. But if we don't, then it's been a great season and we've still got another chance next week. They were so happy with whatever was going to be. And that kind of something which you probably wouldn't ever align with, Dean, is being quite relaxed. But he seems so relaxed and so chilled out. And, you know, talk about team spirit. Well, in the last 2 weeks, they've scored 14 points when the clock's gone red. Rob Vickers, the week before against Sale Sharks, and they were down by four tries, I think, very early on, came back. And same again at Welford Road when it really mattered. So they do have this belief. And it's funny that they've probably not done it for long enough in terms of a style of play. But the last couple of weeks, if it had been Exeter, it would go typical Exeter.
How many phases did they go through with even with the clock red? And they just didn't panic. They didn't. They kept recycling the ball. As you said, wet ball, very greasy, big shots coming in at them. And they deserve their place in the top four. And it's, you know, obviously it's tough for an ex-Leicester man. But it's good to get some new teams in the Premiership, into the playoffs, because, you know, it proves that you can do it. And also, without getting political, it's nice to have a team that hasn't broken the bank to get there as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. But one of their standout players, not one of, the standout player for both sides, Gonifer. I mean, the first try, I've watched it quite a few times, and the first try made me laugh so much because he's got the ball at the base of the ruck and he points to the fly half. It's like, yeah, of course I'm going to pass this. And everyone looks, just as he threw an outrageous dummy pass down Cole, who got left hung out to dry a little bit.
I mean, he should have made the tackle. But yeah. You know, I spoke to Dean after the game and he said we were attacking Leicester in that area. They'd probably seen Northampton have success the weeks before. Actually, there's been a few times Leicester have been broken in around the breakdown. And Dan Cole, you know, can be susceptible there. And they picked on him, and Gonover's a guy with the best feet. And if you've got a guy whose job it is to be scrummaging all game and getting tired scrummaging, you have to look after those guys. And Leicester didn't do it.
Incredible mismatch. Both tries were superb. And then flipping to Sunday, where Wasps, they've also sealed their playoff spots with a tense win, but they look fairly comfortable, 36-29. Off the back of what had been a slightly difficult week, I guess, for some of the players, you know, lots of talk about players' unrest and players potentially leaving. Dayoung's interview with Sara before the game was very good. He didn't really know how to deal with it. But regardless of all of that unrest, it certainly didn't manifest itself on the pitch. The players were brilliant. Willie LaRue, I heard the other day, 21 assists this season.
Yeah.
21 assists, let alone the ones that he's actually gone and scored. He's just been incredible.
It's having that playmaker. So we're all talking about the second playmaker and we know he can step in there, but it's also having that playmaker in that wide channel, because if you've got someone with the passing ability of Danny Cipriani who can throw those long balls, the guy who's catching them is going to be under immense pressure to make a decision and execute his skill, whether that's go himself or throw, you know, use quick hands or whatever. And having that ability is often what creates the try. You know, you almost, if the ball's in the air that long, the defenders think, I can get him man and ball, and he's able to get it through his hands quickly enough that you take that defender out. So I think he's been absolutely superb. Talking of Danny Cipriani, he's had a good season. He has had an unbelievable season.
Best 10 in the Premiership.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
What should he do next? Because
it's tough, isn't it?
I mean, Eddie Jones has said that he wouldn't have Danny Cipriani in the squad as a number two. But if he picked him to go to South Africa on form, he's England's number one, knowing that Owen Farrell plays 12. And I'm not going to talk about Cipriani's personality. I know he's not everyone's favourite cup of tea, and that's fine. But as a player, and if we just talk about him and his playing ability, there's been no one better this season at manipulating defences and creating some of the passes. His range of passing at the line is just superb. So is he in a position now where he harbours his England and World Cup hopes and finds a club in the Premiership, or should he just do what's best for him and head abroad?
The issue with that, and I totally agree on all your points, but the logistics of it. So it's a nightmare situation because it, let's just say Eddie Jones really wants to pick Danny Cipriani.
Yeah.
He'll ring him up, he'll tell him that. But he's got to go to an English club. So he's Eddie's then got to have a commitment from Danny, who doesn't look like he's sorted anything out yet, yeah. that you're going to an English club, otherwise I can't take you. They're taking Brad Moore. You know, we're hearing rumours that they've asked to take Brad Shields yep. because he's coming to
yep.
an English club, ironically, Wasps. But that then puts Danny's negotiations for his agents, yeah. it makes it a nightmare because yeah. if clubs know that he's staying because Eddie's said that he might be involved with England, well, they've all done their recruitment, or at least their planning, and suddenly you've got to find a guy who's going to be expensive. Let's not beat about the yeah. bush. You know, it's going to be tough, isn't it? There's one place that's been mentioned that is lacking a number 10, but it's not English, and that's Ulster.
Yep.
Big news today as to where their outgoing 10-12 partnership are going.
Yep.
But does he go to Ulster? Would Danny Cipriani fit Ulster?
I couldn't imagine Danny spending a year, two or three in Belfast. I just don't think he'd be happy enough off the pitch. And that's no slight on Belfast. I just think he's a cosmopolitan guy that wants to enjoy himself all the time. I'm not saying he can't enjoy himself in Belfast. I've heard reports that he could be off to Stade Francais. And they're really keen.
Got a very good Titanic museum.
I'm not sure how much he's into his history. Huh? but yeah,
Where do you think then? Where would be a good fit that needs the 10?
I spoke to Sips a few months ago and I said, what do you want to do? And he said, I just want to go to a place where I can just be happy and enjoy myself. Not had much chat from Eddie Jones, so I'm just going to do what's best for me. But what was best for Danny a few months ago, what's best for him now, I think slightly changed because he is playing so, so well. Where could he go in the Premiership? Worcester Warriors.
Yeah.
I think they're crying out for a world-class 10. Him and Huhar together would be phenomenal. Ben Tao at 12. We know the star quality they've got in their back three. He would be class.
Can they afford him, though? That's the...
Probably not. I mean, it's such a intricate jigsaw which everyone needs to consider, yeah. think about and try and put together. I don't know what the outcome of it is. If he goes to Paris, I could most definitely see him in Paris. But it would be a shame. It would be a shame to lose one of England's brightest stars.
Yeah.
You know, but he'd also have to go to a place where he can be managed properly. I reckon the best place where he'd be managed would be Newcastle under Dean Richards. Dean Richards wouldn't allow him to perhaps get away with some of the things which he's done previously. He's playing at a team that want to play a fast tempo. That really suits him. They've developed a culture. Good coaches up there, Dave Warder, who's a former 10, who knows him very well, actually, from his WASP days. So Newcastle would probably suit him in best of man management. Would it? Is it a place where he's looked at? I haven't a clue. But either way, it's been quite a long saga. I mean, it was announced he was leaving quite a long time ago. Yeah. Will WASP miss him? I mean, loads of support saying, we're going to miss him. And I can completely understand why, but...
I mentioned... this actually in a newspaper column at the weekend for an option for maybe James Haskell, who hasn't found a club yet. But how about he goes to Japan for the season, which finishes in January, and then sort of hopes that someone is looking to play that injury joker and bring him back in?
That would be a great option. If he was, it's a big gamble.
Yeah, it is.
Because if there isn't that injury dispensation, then he's removed himself from the Premiership and that...
And easier for someone like James Haskell because there's going to be more back rowers that are out.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating. And Sopa Wanga coming in, how much pressure is he under? Because if they don't click straight away, are people going to be saying, oh, why have we got rid of Danny Cipriani?
Of course, but... I can't imagine how he wouldn't. So long as he doesn't come to the Premiership thinking he's playing Super Rugby, I think he'll be okay. It's a very different game. But talking about an All Black who's coming at the peak of his career, a lot of money, huge amount of responsibility, I'm sure he'll click and be all right.
And we mentioned James Haskell quickly there. He was... I loved his interview at the end of the game. So he wasn't holding back, was he? We didn't necessarily agree with the penalty that went against him for a high tackle or the fact that rugby is changing and becoming a bit soft.
Yeah, his quote is, I don't know what's happened to rugby. It sounds like I'm fading out at the right time. It's become a bit of a pathetic sport at the minute. Firstly, did you think the penalty was a penalty?
Probably, yes. But what... So, it's slightly high. It doesn't actually wrap around his neck, but it's over the top of the shoulder. So, a high tackle isn't the neck. It's above the shoulders, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's what has been deemed a seatbelt tackle, hasn't it? That wrap of the arm. Part of it, that is down to his positioning and the fact that he sort of gets spun. So, is there any danger in that tackle? No. Could he have done it differently? It's very difficult to say that, you know, in those specific circumstances, he hasn't done the safest thing available to him to make a tackle. So I think my biggest concern, and while we're talking about rule changes, my biggest concern about rugby's problems at the moment is there are too many instances where an accident that's no more reckless than rugby being a reckless game anyway could lose you the game. So if that was within kickable range and Wasps were winning by a point and he'd done that right at the end of the game and lost the game because of that, it would have been a travesty.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, while we're talking about law changes, do we need some instances that are free kicks where you can kick to the corner and you can get the throw in, but you can't score 3 points from?
Yeah, I think that's... Because essentially we're looking at like an amber card.
Yeah, well,
an amber incident kind of thing.
Well, if you go to cards as well, I think if some of those in between a yellow card and a red card, you know, I think, and again, you don't want to introduce stuff for the sake of introducing it, but I'd like games not to be changed on an accident, but still send a message out. And you could do that maybe by making an enforced substitution or a sin bin, but that guy's not allowed back on the pitch, but you can use one of your other place reserves.
Yeah, I do agree with you. On Haskell's comments, I thought it was irresponsible. I think the players need to understand the power that they have and the influence they have, because he said it is on social media. I think Joe Marler said it's utterly ridiculous. Loads of comments, the game's soft. Where I kind of sit with it is that last week we spent the whole week talking about how brutal and physical the sport is off the back of Rob Horn having to retire. This week, the game's soft. And I'm like, lads, which way is it? Because one week it's brutal. And the fact is, the players just need to buy into what the law changes are. And until they do it, we will forever see penalties, yellow cards, red cards. And that wasn't necessarily a high tackle that could have endangered someone or injured someone. But it's one of those where World Rugby have just introduced it to call it a penalty, to educate the players to basically tackle a little bit lower.
I agree with you, but that's why I'd like it not to be... A penalty is a big thing.
It is a big thing. But for him to come out and say it, I just think... It can't be brutal one week where players are looking for protection, then we bring in laws to protect players, and the next week, the same law which is there to protect you, that you then call the game soft. It's funny because you look at rugby and its evolution. When we took out using your feet at the ruck, it's like, the game's gone soft.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I loved.
I get that.
When we took out the hit from the scrum, no one complained when we took out using your feet at the ruck because no one enjoyed it. When we took out...
Well, it's caused problems, actually. It has caused problems because it's allowed people to lie over the ball and we get slower ball.
But it's a safe sport because of it. And then with the scrums, when we took out the hit, not too many people complained. A few people went, rugby's losing its identity. But with this one, because big lads want to just whack big lads.
Yeah, but I don't think it... Not necessarily in this specific instance.
Yes, no.
But I think one of the issues is, actually, the ball carrier's got a responsibility, if we're going to make it safe, not to dip into contact. So you never quite know what height that tackle's going to be at. And just to say, we'll just go for the legs, that's not always...
No.
That, you know, it's not always possible. You can't get into the position to go for the legs because someone is, you know, if someone goes low enough, they can just easily bounce you off and things. So I sort of, I agree. We needed to send out a message and he needed to be punished, but I don't want these to be those game-changing situations when actually if that had been a free kick and you were allowed to kick for the corner, he would have gone, well, it's ridiculous, but he wouldn't have grumbled quite as much, I don't think.
Yeah, I just kind of think we've got big lads, massive forces on the pitch. And if one of those big lads, in this example, it's Haskell, if he gets that slightly wrong...
As he did against Jamie Roberts.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
We're knocking people out cold. Or we're injuring people. I don't want rugby to be in a place whereby we're saying it's soft based on penalties like that until something really bad happens. Mm. And then the players are like, yeah, I get it now. Why should we wait until someone gets knocked out again or even worse for players to get it? Just buy into it. I spoke to Wayne Barnes about it a couple of weeks ago, and I just think, regardless of whether you like it or not, it's the law. Mm. And the law's not going to change. So until you buy into it, you'll still keep getting penalised for these kind of situations. And for Haskell to then say it's soft, I just think you've got amateur guys who are going out on a Sunday, getting penalised for similar situations, who are then saying to referees, that's soft. I just think it sends out the wrong message.
But let's just finish on a positive about James Haskell.
Yeah.
What a star he has been for Wasps. And, yeah. You know, he's been there through their glory years, through their barren years as well. Fantastic to see the reception he got.
Yeah, it was amazing. And let's face it, he was also one of the poster boys as to that led the charge of them going up to Coventry. You know, the backing of him and the likes of Launchbury and Di Young, you know, he really managed to help get the supporters and the players on board. He's been an incredible servant, one of the big personalities in rugby, and we forever lament the fact there's not enough of them. Well, he's certainly not one of those shrinking violets. An incredible career, still not found a club yet. I hope he does manage to stay in the Premiership because he is a top quality player on his day. Okay, well, we enter the final round of fixtures this weekend on BT Sport. We've got two live games here. We've got Newcastle against Wasps on BT Sport at 3:15. At the same time on BT Sport 3, we've got Sale against Leicester. A week ago, and I'm not trying to undersell these games now, but we know the top four.
Yeah.
But momentum's so key going into the semi-finals. So although Newcastle was secure of their positions, how key is it for Newcastle to keep this momentum going?
I agree with you, actually. I think there needs to be, they almost need to send a sign out to everyone, themselves, the other teams, that qualifying for the top four isn't enough.
Yeah.
Because that's the danger, isn't it? You know, quite rightly so, there was a brilliant social media post from the Falcons account saying that their man of the match was the guy in the Leicester off-licence who served them all the beer. And Dean drinking beer in his post-match interview. Great.
Yeah.
But you've got to then go and back that up, because otherwise it looks like you were celebrating just that's enough, us getting in there. Do they need to win? No.
No.
Don't need to win. They just need to put a performance that we come away saying, actually, had things gone right for them, they could have won that game easily.
Yeah. Who in Newcastle better suited to play in the semis? Because as it stands, they're going to Sandy Park. No, sorry. They're going to Saracens. They're going to Allianz, because Saracens will play Wasps. Do you think they'll be chuffed to have... I mean, no one's chuffed going to Sandy Park. It's a tough place to go and play. But is their game style, their players, are they better suited against...
My worry would be... probably if they're playing either team, but my worry about Sandy Park is that what happened to them in the European Challenge semi-final against Gloucester, where they lost the collisions and couldn't cope, happens to them again down there.
Yeah.
They're almost meeting a similar style of play to them, but a team that consistently would believe that they could outplay Newcastle just by going through the basics and things. Funnily enough, again, who do you think Wasps would prefer to play?
I think Wasps would prefer to play Exeter.
Yeah, I do.
I think it's a looser game. I think it's a more open game.
Yeah.
It suits them. It's funny because we're saying that Exeter are quite similar to Newcastle, but in some regards, they're really similar to Wasps. Wasps don't go through as many phases. They're cutting teams off first, second and third. But in terms of using the full width of the pitch, that's what Exeter do. They really stretch you, and those one-on-one star backs that both teams possess really thrive and operate really well. I think Wasps will be happy going to, not happy, I think they'll be more pleased by going to Sandy Park than going to the Allianz, where Saracens have not conceded a single try in the last three rounds in the second half. Defending unbelievably well would suffocate them. They won't have the front football that they had against Northampton, you wouldn't expect. So as it stands, I reckon Newcastle probably licking their lips and backing themselves to go anywhere right now.
So that's interesting, isn't it? So if you're Dai Young, lads, go out and play, but I'd probably prefer to play Exeter. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly. Those 3 points in the front of the sticks, do you want to just kick to the corner and just maybe throw a not straight?
Wadey's free on the line, suddenly turns right, steps off the pitch.
It'll be interesting to see what teams both...
It is a clash of styles, isn't it, that actually those Wasp might well... They're almost playing the wrong teams as it stands at the moment.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. I mean, I said in terms of the table, it's not much is going to be affected, but in terms of the intrigue towards Newcastle against Wasps, for me, it's an exciting game.
Yeah.
I think Wasps need to improve their defence. Dai Young, furious again. It's honestly, he may as well have that message on dictaphone week after week. Really chuffed of our attack. Got showed the same enthusiasm as in defence. Too soft. Northampton opened them up. A team that playing for nothing, and that they can often be a dangerous beast. They've got to show the same enthusiasm, intensity, both sides of the ball. Otherwise, they'll find themselves in the same situation, Prem final, not being able to win it just because they only played one side of the ball. Sale against Leicester. It's a massive game for Sale. They were very good down at Sandy Park. I watched that game on Monday. Created loads of opportunities. At times, they overplay. I think they've clearly got to be a lot more measured this weekend. But, you know, Leicester losing their last two home games, if they get a quick start, they could just plant the seeds of doubt into Leicester's minds.
Oh, definitely.
And that's something that they may look to try and lean upon throughout the game.
It's a really tough week for Leicester.
Yep.
Because having dealt with that disappointment, first time that they haven't been in the playoffs, how do you then motivate? And yes, you know, you're playing for your top six next year, you're planning to play in Europe, but still, it's a situation a lot of them haven't been in before. And with that disappointment of we've blown it, you know, we've blown our opportunity, they then have a really tough game of a team that are going to be bang up for this game.
Yeah, of course. It should be an absolutely thrilling weekend of final weekend of Aviva Premiership Rugby. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Next week on Rugby Tonight podcast, we'll be looking ahead to the European Champions Cup and European Challenge Cup finals in Bilbao. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review if you've enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.